Greetings once again to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, coming to you on a beautiful, stormy summer night. High atop the Rocky Mountains, Denver, Colorado. Well, not high atop the Rocky Mountains, but we can see the tops of the Rocky Mountains, and we're in full festive celebration mode here in the Worldview Studios as our eldest daughter, Nicole, celebrated her 8th birthday this weekend. So I am hopped up on the prerequisite ice cream and cake. And ready to do the broadcast. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. I'll try to calm down a little bit. As we move through the news of the week, the news of this past week, and we look forward into the coming week. And is it selfish of me not to really care much about the news this week? Because I really don't. I mean, I've been paying attention to what's been going on with the town hall meetings and the mobs and the Democrats and the Obama and all of that. And, you know, frankly, I'm more interested in Nicole's 8th birthday. And they've been having just an awesome time. You know, it was getting a little bit depressing around here because of the neighborhood heathens that, you know, the public school products who run around the neighborhood... Nicole's had her ups and downs with those kids, and it's getting to the point where generally she can't really hang out with them anymore, and my wife and I realize that overall we make our neighbors relatively uncomfortable because we're a little bit odd, we're a little bit strange. We homeschool our daughter, and we don't allow her to run around with the public school products in the neighborhood. But thankfully, because of some friends from church, Nicole has had just an outstanding birthday celebration over the past couple of days. And so it all has worked out for the good. And that's really been the main focus of our entire existence for the last 72 hours or so. It's a full birthday weekend here. Not just a birthday, but a weekend of celebrations. And we've been having a good time. But the news does continue. And I will bring it to you because I must. It is something that I have taken upon myself to do, and so I will do it, and I'll do it with a positive mental attitude, and I'll try to be somewhat educational and somewhat entertaining along the way. But remember, my mind is elsewhere. All right, but we do have some tremendous good news right here in the state of Colorado from the Denver Post. Abortion opponents are one step closer to putting a personhood amendment on the 2010 ballot after their title proposal was approved this past week. The next step is getting approval for the language on petition forms and then gathering the 76,000 valid voter signatures over the next 6 months. Hallelujah, glory, this is awesome. We're doing it again, and we're never going to stop. We will keep pushing personhood until we win somewhere, someday, and it may be in Colorado in 2010. The Denver Post tells us that this year's proposal differs from the failed 2008 personhood amendment. That's according to Leslie Hanks, vice president of Colorado Right to Life. And I want to ask the Denver Post, did it fail? They call it a failed proposal, but did it fail? I think not. Now, the people at the Denver Post obviously would think it failed because we did not win the election. Personhood was not approved here in Colorado, but we've built the foundation upon which we will continue to fight this battle. We've built the infrastructure. We've brought in the people necessary to get it done, and we will keep going until the Lord returns, or there's a nuclear conflict that wrecks all of Western civilization, or we win, and innocent people are recognized at all stages of life. Now, how does the proposal differ for the 2010 ballot than it did for the 2008 ballot? Well, that proposal, you'll remember, defined a fertilized human egg as a person, which proponents conceded confused the public. I don't know that I ever conceded that, and I was a proponent. And maybe it did confuse the public, because after all, we're dealing with a lot of stupid people. people who've been miseducated their entire lives, so maybe they were a bit confused. I know Matt Drudge was confused. I was very disappointed to see Matt put up a headline that said, had a fertilized egg, a person, question mark, and I thought, Matt, I thought you were pro-life. Anyway, it's Matt Drudge, and I don't want to get off on Matt Drudge. He does fine work, I'm sure. Anyway, the public was confused because we called a fertilized human egg a person, which it is, but that confused the relatively stupid products of the public schools. The new one refers to the beginning of biological development of that human being. The title now reads, according to the Denver Post, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution applying the term person as used in those provisions of the Colorado Constitution relating to inalienable rights, equality of justice, and due process of law to every human being from the beginning of the biological development of that human being. Well, it couldn't be more clear, could it, ladies and gentlemen? We're still talking about a fertilized egg here, but we've adjusted the language. And so hopefully people won't be quite as confused, although we know that our opponents, our enemies, were not confused. They know what this is about. They know this is their Waterloo, and it's coming their way. It's like a train, a freight train, barreling down the tracks, headed right toward the headquarters of Planned Parenthood and NARAL and the abortion industry. And that train is chugging down the tracks, brothers and sisters. Can I get an amen? All right. Now, Tony Panetta, the political director for NARAL, Pro-Choice Colorado, said her group hasn't decided whether to challenge the title board ruling. Obviously, members of her organization were too busy getting the pastel red, white, and blue Obama hope image tattooed right over their tramp stamps. So they didn't have time necessarily to put together a plan to challenge the title board ruling. Now, they would if they could. They would if they thought they could win, but out here in Colorado, we've set a precedent, and it's a more powerful precedent than anything we had hoped for from the Republican courts. It is a precedent that a personhood amendment has already been approved for the ballot, and so as long as we get in there, and let's see, what are the requirements here? Let's see, this NARAL skank. She said that the 2010 proposal looks much like the 08 proposal. It's just as vague and confusing, according to her, as she was waking up, you know, on a Saturday morning with a microphone stuck in her face from the Denver Post. And as she wiped the gin off her chin, you know, she was just, it's vague and confusing. Yeah, from the beginning of the biological development of that human being, Ms. Panetta, it's not really vague and confusing. So as long as the Secretary of State determines that this is a single issue and that it's a clear statement, we will win approval and we will gain the signatures. We're gearing up for that now. The Denver Post tells us that voters in 2008 defeated Amendment 48 with 72.8% against and 27.2% in favor. So just under 30% of Coloradans said, yes, a fertilized egg is a human being. How many Coloradans will say that every human being is a person from the beginning of their biological development? Well, I will let you know in November of 2010 because we will put it on the ballot. I've got another quote from Leslie Hanks, Colorado Right to Life, vice president. She said, since our so-called trouncing in 2008, 25 other states are pursuing personhood. So yes, we are optimistic. Go get him, Leslie. I mean, just show me the way, sister. I mean, hold the torch up high, sister, because I'm following you all the way down the tracks, right to the headquarters of into the bowels of the child-killing industry. I'm with Leslie. Man, that is some exciting news. During the weekend of our eldest daughter's 8th birthday, the second personhood amendment wins a preliminary approval, and folks, we're fired up. That's all there is to it. We are fired up. We're ready to go. And out here in Colorado, we are leading the way. We are leading the way. And we welcome you in. Come on in. The water is warm. If you're interested in personhood, go to the website, go to the web, type in Personhood USA, and find out what you can do in your state. 25 other states currently are working on either legislative or ballot initiative referenda to declare that every human being is a person, no matter how small they are. Praise God. There is a light for Western civilization, and that light was sparked by the vision of personhood undertaken here in Colorado by normal, average, everyday citizens just like you. No supermen, no superwomen. People with day jobs, people with families to support, people who are out of work, people who are out of money, just like everyone else in this brutal economy. But we've got something to look forward to, and that is a victory for the personhood of every human being in the United States of America, and eventually in the world. So keep your prayers going and get active. And when you go to Personhood USA, they need some money, okay? They could use some money. Go to Personhood USA and fill their coffers to overflowing. Give sacrificially, because this is the battle that will be to our generation what the anti-slavery battle was to the generation that founded the Republican Party. And you don't want to miss that, because you'll feel like a dope at the end of the day. All right, so there is the shining light of good news coming out of Colorado. Now let's move into the other news that I wasn't so motivated to give until I had all that ice cream and cake, and then I figured I can get through this. Okay. Dateline from the International File. Dateline Patna, India, from the Reuters Wire. Authorities in eastern India are distributing free radio sets to lower caste villagers so they can listen to music and news after a hard day's work and improve their awareness. Officials in Bihar State are distributing transistor radios that cost about $8 each among hundreds of Dalits, which were formerly known as the Untouchables. This is the oppressed lower class of India's ancient Hindu caste system. I had an opportunity to visit India, and I stayed in the tourist section there in Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay, and currently known as Bombay, because Bombay sounds a lot cooler than Mumbai. But anyways, had a chance to visit there. I spent a couple of weeks there, and we were in the upper echelon section there where all the tourists come. And the poverty, the filth in the streets, the naked, filthy children begging in the streets was enough to break your heart. And we were in the nice part of town. I would have hated to visit some of the outlying villages and see what's going on there. But now the government there in India, they apparently, according to the Reuters Wire, more than 16% of India's 1.1 billion people are Dalits, or untouchables is what they were called. And they continue to face discrimination and injustice. Although India recently passed a law granting full personhood to the Dalits, to the untouchables, and untouchability as a part of the ancient Hindu caste system is now a crime. So, you know, the first step that India has pursued in eliminating this horrible injustice against 20% of its population, approximately, started with granting them full personhood. The first step is the full personhood of the oppressed. You know, 20 million people are currently systematically oppressed in India, and a combination of bad religion and bad government has instituted this Dalit untouchable caste system for hundreds of years, maybe 1,000 years. But they've passed a law that untouchability is now a crime. These are human beings. These are full persons. Now, here in America, 1 million or more people every year are arbitrarily killed in legal abortion clinics. And the question I have is, will we achieve personhood for those people before India fully destigmatizes the Dalits? Well, the race is on, isn't it? And should we, as America, having a foundation, a Christian heritage from which to launch our efforts, should we not be able to outstrip the Indians in their granting of full personhood to those who are oppressed? You know, they've already changed their law. They've said untouchability is now a crime. So they've got a head start. We've got to redouble our efforts. Here in Colorado, we plan to do that in 2010. In 25 other states across the country, we plan to do that as well, to grant full personhood to those who are oppressed. And let's hope that we don't embarrass ourselves when put up against the folks in India in the battle for the full personhood of the oppressed. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am Doug McBurney, and let's continue as we move through the news of the week. We're going to go into the politics file. The politics file is very thick this week because there's just been a lot of political nonsense going on, as you've all followed, I'm sure. I get an opportunity to listen to about 16 minutes of talk radio every day these days on my way to and from the office, and I was nonplussed, fairly unimpressed with the current debate over healthcare and the focus there, and the angry mobs that the conservatives seem to have whipped up into a frenzy to shout down the Democrats. For a day it was interesting, but it's been a week, and it's just interesting to me where conservatives choose to focus their efforts, especially here we are on the cusp of another battle, a battle that will eventually change the entire paradigm of Western civilization. I'm talking about personhood. But the Republicans don't seem to be whipped in a frenzy until you go after something that directly affects their wallet. And that's just a little bit depressing. And I'm not for socialized medicine, don't get me wrong. I'm not for socialized anything in any way. I'm for liberty. Case in point, Dateline Havana, Cuba, from the Reuters Wire. Cuba, in the grip of a serious economic crisis, is running short of toilet paper and may not get sufficient supplies until the end of the year, according to officials with the state-run media there. Officials said they were lowering the prices of 24 basic goods there in Cuba to help Cubans get through the difficulties provoked in part by the global financial crisis and three destructive hurricanes that struck the island last year. And the one destructive dictator who struck back in 1950-something, Fidel. Yeah. He's brought them into some financial disrepair, which is evidenced by the fact that no one has a car. No one has a car later than, I think, 1959. Was that when Cuba... You may want to call and correct me on that. I don't recall. I wasn't alive when Fidel Castro took over, and I'm well into middle age, so you do the math on that. Now, according to officials there with CIMEX, the state-run radio in Cuba, yes, the toilet paper crisis, the state-run corporation, according to CIMEX, has taken all the steps so that at the end of the year, there will be an important importation of toilet paper. Now, it's August, ladies and gentlemen. It's early August. And down in Cuba, where socialized medicine and socialized everything else has been the norm, they're hoping to get toilet paper by the end of the year. The shipment, according to Reuters, will enable the state-run company that sells everything to everyone, apparently, to, quote, supply this demand that today is presenting problems. Now, I don't want to get into exactly what problems could be presented by a distinct shortage in the toilet paper department, but, it's relatively unpleasant to think about. And it's funny to think that the Cubans have gotten themselves into this fix. I mean, we all know there's problems with socialism, and we can talk about health care, and we can talk about industry, but there's no need to really draw analogies when Cuba's running out of toilet paper. I mean, reality is what it is, and it's right in your face with the toilet paper crisis. Well, not in your face, but anyway, according to the Reuters Wire, a visit to a store in Havana's Vidado neighborhood last week found that prices had dropped for staple goods like mayonnaise, barbecue sauce, and canned squid, which anyone knows leads to a need for toilet paper. I mean, if you're getting a great deal on squid, you know you're going to need some toilet paper if you avail yourself of that discount. And so it's just sad to see the Cuban people have been put into this fix by their government. Cubans, according to the Reuters Wire, receive a subsidized food ration from the government each month that they say meets their needs for about 2 weeks. Okay, so let's do the math on that. Cubans receive a subsidized food ration from the government each month that meets their needs for about 2 weeks. Okay, that's socialism right there. And, you know, if you've got to get through a month and you've only got 2 weeks worth of toilet paper and squid, man, there's going to be some problems come the end of the month. It's going to be unpleasant around the house. Those poor Cubans, I'll tell you. Now, Cuba has long blamed, according to Reuters, the 47-year-old U.S. trade embargo against the island for many of its economic problems. And I'm sure that they will try to blame the toilet paper crisis on the embargo. But if I'm not mistaken, there is toilet paper available from other sources. I don't think that the United States has cornered the toilet paper market yet. And so the Cubans really, this is a time when they need to sit down and reevaluate their socialist utopia there on that beautiful island that has been corrupted and ruined by the humanists, the neo-Nimrodians who are currently running Cuba, and their fans and acolytes there in Washington, D.C., who have taken over our government. Case in point, Dateline Washington, D.C., from the Associated Press, Sonia Sotomayor has been sworn in as the Supreme Court's first Hispanic justice. Oh, and by the way, they point out that she is a female as well, which, if you've ever seen her, it's something that needs to be pointed out. Sotomayor's mother, brother, other relatives, and friends joined her for the occasion. I read that line, I'm thinking, what? She's got no husband and no kids? How is she qualified to sit on the highest court in the land if she's never raised a family? How does that happen? I suppose there's no answer to that, except that the leftists and the humanists worship a woman who has had no kids and who's had a career in, well, I guess injustice, if you could call it that. But she has had a career. I will not argue that. You know, she was a quota hire from the beginning, and she's really made the most of it. There's no doubt about that, now sitting on the Supreme Court. More from the AP story. Sotomayor is 55 years old, no husband, no kids, doesn't want none, doesn't care, doesn't want to talk about it. She's been a federal judge. I made that last part up. That wasn't in the AP story. Maybe she does want to talk about it. She could give me a call if she wanted to talk about that empty part of her life that wasn't filled by the career she's had, manipulating justice, destroying children, ruining people's lives, just towing the Democratic line. Maybe it hasn't really been that fulfilling for you, Sonia, and if you want to talk about it, you know, don't give me a call. Shoot me an email. Maybe I'll get back to you. I doubt it. She's been a federal judge for 17 years. She was appointed by George H.W. Bush, Bush 41. So she's a Republican justice. You may want to make a note of that the next time you go into the voting booth and you think you're voting for the Republicans because they're going to give us a conservative court. Just a mental note there, okay? Let's see. Barry Ho nominated her in May to take the place of Justice David Souter after Souter announced that he is going to die. Oh, no, he's going to retire. I'm sorry he's going to retire. She's been a federal judge for 17 years, and she's been an uptight, leftist, fairly dim, relatively unattractive bureaucrat for that entire time, Ms. Sotomayor has. And in my opinion, the news media focusing on the fact that she is a Latina woman is really missing the point. Because Sonia Sotomayor's victory is really a victory for the stupid and the ugly, more so than it is for Hispanics. I mean, let's just not mince any words here, ladies and gentlemen. I think I'll move on from that. I'm probably going to get audited by the IRS. I'm going to get reported. All right. The big news earlier in the week, Bubba Bill Jeff is back in the news, rearing his ugly head again. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from August 5th, the Reuters wire. Two American journalists freed by North Korea from months of detention returned to the United States this past week, accompanied by former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, who secured their release in a meeting with the reclusive state's leader, Kim Dong-il. So he had an actual meeting with Kim Dong-il. And I'm not going to capitalize on the obvious opportunity for jokes here that Bill Clinton was on a 12-hour flight with two young, relatively attractive reporters. I'm just not going to go there. Because that's just too easy. What I want to know is, what did Bubba Bill Jeff promise Kim Dong-il? I mean, was it a case of Tangeray? Was it, what was it? Was it to allow him to pursue nuclear weapons and continue to export nuclear and biological and weapons of mass destruction technology to enemies of the United States? Or was it just chicks? I mean, I just want to know, what did he promise the guy to secure the release? You'll remember both of these reporters, they work for Al Gore on his current TV, whatever that is. They were sentenced to 12 years of hard labor back in June. U.S. officials said North Korea was not promised any rewards for their release, and there was no link to nuclear non-proliferation talks. Hillary Clinton added that there was no connection between the effort to free the two journalists and the thorny nuclear issue. Okay, Hill. Methinks thou doth protest too much. We've got the State Department. We've got Hillary Clinton herself. We've got U.S. officials, North Korean officials, everyone who's official in any way saying this has nothing to do with North Korea's nuclear program. And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I think it comes down to more than just good quality whiskey and girls. I think there's been some promise made here from Bubba to Kim Dong, and I'm concerned as to how that's all going to work out. Let's see here. What did Hillary have to say? We have always considered that a totally separate issue from our efforts to re-engage the North Koreans and have them return to the six-party talks and work for a commitment for the full, verifiable denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. So you see how she said that? You know? So if the South had nukes, apparently that would be just as bad in Hillary's mind as if the North had nukes. And she wants the entire peninsula. She thinks there's a problem with the entire peninsula. Hey, Hillary, look at a satellite picture. There's no lights in the North at night. There's really only a problem with the top half of the peninsula, Hill, as far as nuclear proliferation goes and the threat of destruction and the Third World War. It really boils down to that area north of the 38th parallel. Someone needs to send Hillary a memo on that. Maybe Dick Cheney could send that picture he had. That was very compelling. Anyway, I it bothers me the way leftists equivocate wickedness as if we're all equally guilty, and we all need to work and play well with others. And it's really not all about North Korea. It's about denuclearization of the entire peninsula. You know, Hillary, just get out of here. You know, please. Dateline Washington, From the AP, a wealthy Hollywood producer paid for the flight that carried former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton and two American journalists home from North Korea. Stephen Bing, who's apparently a friend of Bubba Bill Jeff and a Democratic fundraiser, he owned the plane. He raised $100,000 for Hillary's 2008 presidential campaign. He also donated at least $10 million to Bill Clinton's president to Bill Clinton's presidential library and charitable foundation. Now, you've just got to ask yourself, how does someone achieve this level of success in business to be able to own his own plane, to be able to donate $10 million to anything? How does one achieve that level of success and still be in a position to be flim-flammed and finagled and shucked and jived by the likes of Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton? You've just got to ask yourself. And it goes back to the statement I made to my 8-year-old daughter. Life is not fair. It's not about being fair. Let's see. What else has Mr. Bing been up to? He contributed $40 million to the failed 2006 California ballot initiative that sought to tax companies for drilling for oil in California. So just a real genius here, you know, and a successful businessman, somehow. Now, to finish off with the Democrats quickly before we take a break, from Fox News, the White House strategy of turning supporters into snitches when they see fishy information about the health care debate may run afoul of the law, according to Fox News. A quote from Judge Andrew Napolitano, a Fox News analyst there, he says, quote, "The White House is in a bit of a conundrum because of this privacy statute that prohibits the White House from collecting data and storing it on people who disagree with it." And you've heard of, the Privacy Act of 1974, you'll remember, was passed after the Nixon administration used federal agencies to illegally investigate individuals for political purposes. The statute generally prohibits any federal agency from maintaining records on individuals exercising their right to free speech. Well, the White House, you know, has been under fire since it posted a blog on Tuesday that asked supporters to email any fishy information seen on the web or reviewed electronically to flag@whitehouse.gov. Yeah, flag@whitehouse.gov. Now, that's not to be confused with a similar operation to gather any so-called disinformation or fishy information against gays in the military or for the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell, don't smile policy or against civil unions for homosexuals. And that, if you found any fishy information on that, you sent your email to fag@whitehouse.gov. That was a separate operation. But both of them apparently may violate the law. And I suppose I'm not really that surprised. Okay. And let's move now to Anchorage, Alaska. From the Associated Press, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin called President Barack Obama's health plan downright evil in her first online comments since leaving office. She said that in a Facebook posting. Okay. But she still expects us to take it seriously. She said that he would create a, quote, death panel, unquote, that would deny care to the neediest Americans. She says such a system is downright evil, she wrote on her Facebook page, which has nearly 700,000 supporters. Wow, that's pretty good. Are we up to 700,000 listeners yet? Has anyone checked the live feed there on FeedBurner? I don't think we've eclipsed 700,000 yet, but we're well on our way. Now, according to the AP, the claim that the Democratic health bills would encourage euthanasia has been circulating on the internet for weeks. It's been echoed by some Republican leaders. Democrats from Obama on down have dismissed it as a distortion. The nonpartisan group FactCheck.org, which is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania, says that the claim that the Democrats are going to kill old people is false. But where does the AP get the idea that factcheck.org is nonpartisan and that anything associated with the Annenberg Public Policy Center is anything but partisan? But that's neither here nor there. We can't expect the modern graduates of journalism school with their communications degrees to really know what's going on. The allegation, according to the Associated Press, appears to be based on a provision of the House bill that would require Medicare to pay for end-of-life counseling sessions on a voluntary basis for beneficiaries who want the service. Medicare already covers hospice care, and legislation passed by Congress in 1990 requires that patients be asked if they have a living will. So basically, the Democrats want doctors to ask old people, do you have all your papers in order? Okay, are you sure you want this life-saving treatment? We've got some wonderful hospice care. It comes with morphine and lots of ice cream. And wouldn't you, you know, could we sit down and just talk about this? Have you considered the benefits of just getting out, of just dying? I mean, you're costing us a fortune. Have you thought about hospice care? Let's have a counseling session and see if we can get you to volunteer to just go gracefully into that good night. Anyway, so that's been around since 1990. So this whole idea of socialized medicine has been creeping, crawling, and festering for the better part of 40 years. And, you know, you remember 1992, right? 1993? We all remember, right? The Clintons wanted health care. They were going to change the world. They were going to change health care. And now they're back, 15 years later, 17 years later, and they're stronger than ever. They're going to do it again. What we have to do, ladies and gentlemen, is we have to, instead of fighting against health care, we need to undermine the foundation, the secular humanist foundation that these Democrats exist on. We need to destroy that foundation. And the way to do it is personhood. If we can recognize every human being as a person from the beginning of the biological development of that human being, we've destroyed the foundation for nationalized healthcare in which people are encouraged to voluntarily die. Anyway, so that's Palin. You know, if she can recover from the stain of McCain, she could be something. She could be. We need to get in touch with her on personhood and let her know that, you know, if you want to be somebody like Abraham Lincoln-esque, you need to get on board, Sarah, because the train is leaving the station. So glad to have you aboard as we chug down the tracks to paradise, glory, and all of that. Revival. So that's it for politics. I've had just about enough of that. I mean, that was tough to get through. I have a very thin domestic tranquility file this week because, frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I'm to the point where I can't do it anymore. I watch the local news here in Denver. Every evening I try to catch the weather. And every night, there's someone in Denver who's being beaten, robbed, shot, killed, tortured, set on fire, thrown into the lake, cast out a window. And I could do the domestic tranquility file from Denver every week if I wanted to, and I could do the entire broadcast about the state of domestic tranquility and the fact that, there's less and less of it about. And so I purposely have avoided stories that are just starting to drive me insane and want to make me get on a plane for anywhere. Because I know that's not realistic, and I know that everywhere is probably as bad, if not worse, than here. But the state of domestic tranquility here in America, because of the justice system, which some people say is the best justice system in the world, if this is the best we can do, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. I do not approve. I am disappointed. I want to register my dissatisfaction with the system. But this story I simply could not ignore. From the London Telegraph, oddly enough, A Long Island mom guzzled vodka and smoked pot in a minivan packed with young kids before speeding the wrong way down the Taconic Parkway, sparking a head-on collision that killed 8 people. Diane Schuler had knocked back the equivalent of 10 shots of 80-proof booze and smoked marijuana as recently as 15 minutes before the horrific July 26th crash. The crash killed Diane Schuler, her 2-year-old daughter, and 3 nieces, as well as 3 men in the car she hit. Her 5-year-old son miraculously survived the crash, according to the London Daily Telegraph. That qualifies as a miracle. In addition to the booze and the marijuana, the West Babylon resident had a high number. In addition to the booze, the West Babylon, that's kind of ironic. She was a resident of West Babylon. She had a high number, 113 nanograms per milliliter of THC, the active component of marijuana, in her bloodstream. And, you know, this is, you know, people think that marijuana is just a fun drug, but I have witnessed, ladies and gentlemen, people drinking alcohol and then smoking marijuana and literally falling over on their face and not waking up for 8 hours because of the interaction of the two drugs together. Extremely dangerous. Not exactly a party situation, as this story points out. Now, Schuler's husband, who's a Nassau County public safety officer, there's a little bit more irony, Daniel Schuler, he told police that his wife occasionally smoked pot and was a social drinker. He said she was not an alcoholic and she did not have a drinking problem, which all may be very well and true, Mr. Schuler, but that night she had a drinking problem. And 7 other people were brought into that problem, 7 innocent people, because she was just partying, having fun, getting drunk, and smoking some pot. Which Hollywood and Madison Avenue seem to think are really just, it's all fun and games out there. It's not fun and games. And for all of you young parents and all of you children and teenagers out there, it's not all fun and games. And you have to be responsible for yourself and for the safety of the people who entrust you with their lives when they get into a car with you or whether they're just living in your home. Anyway, so be warned. This is not all fun and games. Outside the house, according to the London Telegraph story, outside the house of Schuler's brother, whose 3 daughters died, her 3 nieces died, her brother's children died in her minivan because she was smoking some dope and drinking. Well, outside of his house, a neighbor said to the camera, "She's going to burn in hell." Wow. She's going to burn in hell. Well, I guess we'll see, won't we? But if you kill innocent people, you should burn in hell. And this woman killed innocent people. And I doubt she had a chance to repent between her last hit of marijuana and the crash. I seriously doubt that. So chances are, yes, she's going to burn in hell. But what a tragic story. But that's it for the Domestic Tranquility File this week. I cannot take it. I have 3 young daughters, and I just can't do it anymore. I can't read the news about the way people hurt each other anymore because it's starting to affect my psyche. It's starting to get me down. So let's jump into the International File for some international follies to try to raise the spirits here. Dateline Zurich, which is in Switzerland for all you public school teachers, after centuries of praying for a local great glacier to stop growing. Should I say that again? I'll say that again. After centuries of praying for a local glacier to stop growing, Swiss villagers are now seeking an audience with Pope Benedict to get his blessing for prayers against the global warming that is causing the glacier to now melt. It's just funny, okay? In 1678, you'll remember, the inhabitants of the Alpine villages of Freischarstal in Freisch made a formal vow to live virtuously and pray against the growth of the Aletsch Glacier. Europe's longest glacier, which had caused a lake to flood into their homes back there in 1678. To reinforce their prayers, they started holding an annual procession in 1862 when the glacier reached its longest point during the mini ice age Europe suffered back in the mid-19th century. Now, the residents of Feisch and Fischerstall hope that this will happen. They hope to get an audience with the Pope in September or October, and they're optimistic that the Holy Father will decide in their favor, as he has repeatedly spoken about climate change. He's concerned about climate change. Now, researchers are predicting that the temperatures in the Swiss Alps will rise by 1.8 degrees Celsius in winter and by 2.7 degrees Celsius in the summer by 2050. That's, researchers are saying that, 2050, when most of the people making such predictions will either be dead or completely forgotten. And the glacier will still be there to one extent or another, and the Catholics will still be seeing Mary in their breakfast dish, and they'll still be praying for the glacier to either stop melting or start melting, because Catholicism seems to have degenerated into something of a party game. It's just ridiculous. It's just so sad. All right, let's see here. All right, now, be ready for this one. I'm going to need some guidance here. Dateline Tokyo, from the Reuters Wire. A customer banned from a Tokyo ear cleaning salon was arrested in Tokyo Monday on suspicion of stabbing a young woman who worked at the salon and possibly killing her grandmother. Now, I don't know that here in America we have ear cleaning salons. I mean, a salon that focuses specifically on the cleaning of the ears. I mean, the Japanese are very specialized over there. I mean, do you have any insight on this? Is this like the ear candling that they do? Or let's see. According to Reuters, Japan has many salons where workers, often women, clean customers' ears with ear picks, sometimes as the customers lie on the workers' laps. Mm-hmm. That's a custom. Okay. Now, the... I don't really want to do the story anymore, just because the ear cleaning is so bizarre. I lived in Japan for a number of years, and I just don't recall stumbling past an ear cleaning salon. Is this new?
I don't know.
No. Okay. Now my wife is from Japan, and she has no clue about any of this, and she doesn't want to be associated in any way with what's going on here. But anyway, the Japanese are they're a cleanly lot and very specialized. And, you know, if you can find a niche and fill it, I suppose that's as honorable as any other way to make a living. The heat and the dust increase my desolation. And God, we've tried. Always with you and you, you and you. All right, we're rounding third, and we are headed for home here in the weekly broadcast, the heartbeat of conservative talk on the radio. When everyone else is not quite conservative enough for you, you know you can find refuge here at the Weekly Worldview, because we don't pull any punches. We're as conservative as it gets. We're so far to the right that we're coming around on ourselves here. We've moved so far to the right. Dateline, Shanghai, China. Deng Shenshan, a 16-year-old Chinese boy, was just the latest teenager to be sent by his parents to one of the clinics being set up across China to cure youngsters of their obsession with online gaming. Yes, his parents paid about $1,000 for a month of treatment for their young son, who was addicted to the joystick. I mean, he just couldn't get off it. He was online playing games all the time. Now, the parents thought that he was going to get some gentle counseling and try to get his head back on straight and get off the video games. But the boy, it turns out, was placed in solitary confinement shortly after his arrival. Then he was beaten by his trainers, who scolded him for running too slowly when he was ordered to go jogging. He was pronounced dead in the early hours of this Sunday morning past. Not funny. This is the latest controversy in China concerning the treatment of internet addiction there in China. Last month, the health ministry banned the sale of banned the use of electroshock therapy as a treatment for online game. I know. Electroshock therapy? I mean, has that been done in the United States since World War II at all for anything?
There's some people do that.
Maybe it's effective. I don't know. It definitely, it's got to be more effective than pummeling a young lad to death. I mean, I could definitely see some corporal punishment for a kid who can't put the video games down. But beating the young lad to death because he was couldn't keep up with the rest of the kids jogging seems a bit extreme. But, you know, folks, a pagan culture cannot offer a spiritual solution. And so they'll beat you, they'll shock you. They don't know what to do. They have no spiritual foundation. What's that?
So they clean the ears.
So they end up opening ear cleaning salons, for crying out loud. No, I mean, this is... you know, folks, an atheist China is a dangerous China. We must Christianize China. And I'm glad for folks like Cal Zastro, who just a few weeks ago smuggled some thousands of Bibles into China, risking life and limb to do that. And, you know, God bless you, Cal, because if we don't Christianize China, it's just a matter of time before China becomes the superpower. The rival superpower to the United States, and we just don't need that, ladies and gentlemen. We either need to Christianize America or Christianize China, or things are going to get really ugly. All right, now, speaking of the East, we're going to come back a little bit. We're going to go to Moscow on the Reuters wire. Russian soccer fans have been told to drink whiskey on their trip to Wales for next month's World Cup qualifier to ward off the swine flu. Yeah, like they wouldn't have drank that whiskey anyways. Come on. These are soccer fans, for crying out loud. I suppose they're Russians. They probably would have drank vodka, but I'm sure they'll take this as license to take it. Let's see. The head of the Russian Soccer Fans Association, Alexander Spifirgian, he says, "We urge our fans to drink a lot of Welsh whiskey." That's not a Russian accent. I can't do a Russian accent. I'm slipping into like a Scottish accent. Man, I tell you, it's the ice cream and cake. It's all gone to my head here. "We urge our fans to drink a lot of Welsh whiskey as a form of disinfection." All right, I won't try an accent because I obviously can't do it. Anyway, they're urging their fans to drink Welsh whiskey to ward off the flu. They say that the Welsh whiskey, if consumed in the proper quantities, high quantities, will cure all symptoms of the disease. And, you know, after enough Welsh whiskey, you definitely wouldn't notice the flu, you know, or the fact that soccer is boring and pointless and that you're wasting your life traveling to watch a soccer game. All right, I better get to this before the show ends. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from the Reuters wire, marine scientists from California have ventured to the middle of the North Pacific for a study of plastic debris accumulating across hundreds of miles of open sea. This area has been dubbed the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Yeah, it's all a bunch of plastic and garbage that is accumulating there in the North Pacific. It's wild. The expedition will study how much debris, mostly tiny plastic fragments, is collecting in an expansive sea known as the North Pacific Ocean Gyre. The North Pacific Ocean Gyre. and they want to know how that material is distributed and how it affects marine life. This is valuable work, in my opinion. The debris ends up concentrated by circular clockwise ocean currents within an oblong-shaped convergence zone hundreds of miles across from end to end near the Hawaiian Islands, about midway between Japan and the west coast of the United States. Little is known, according to Reuters, about the exact size and scope of the vast debris field discovered some years ago by fishermen and others in the North Pacific that is widely referred to as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. The debris zone shifts by as much as 1,000 miles north and south on a seasonal basis. Besides the potential harm to sea life caused by ingesting bits of plastic, the expedition team wants to look at a number of other factors and just find out what's going on with all this garbage that's collecting in the North Pacific. And you know, folks, the big picture is fascinating to me. The fact that the oceans come together in the North Pacific and we can actually identify this gyre, this zone, this area where everything that's thrown in the garbage in Hawaii and in Tokyo eventually all floats together up in the North Pacific. It's just fascinating to me. And you know, you may never think that throwing a styrofoam cup overboard, you know, off your boat there in San Diego could mean anything at all, good or bad. It, you know, it just seems so insignificant. But it all comes together eventually, somewhere. You know, just like the choices we make and the actions we take in our lives that on a day-to-day basis seem relatively insignificant, but think about the big picture because it all comes together somewhere. And it may sneak up and bite you. And that brings it. Warning, 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 Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Take me now to the book of Matthew, the 12th chapter, the 36th verse, where Jesus said to us, "But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it. They will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." Every idle word, like a styrofoam cup thrown overboard, there will be an accounting. Oh, and we're coming up on the end here. Dateline Los Angeles from the Reuters Wire, the 6th edition of the UCLA Slang Dictionary is being published this month. The book is released every 4 years by linguistics professor Pamela Monroe and her students over there at UCLA. Now, the dictionary supplies such words and definitions as presh. That's presh, P-R-E-S-H, which means cute or precious. Other terms or phrases include FOMO. FOMO, which means fear of missing out. I thought a FOMO was a female homo. What? I don't know where they obviously haven't done their research there. Anyway, schwa means wow. Why does schwa mean wow? That's harder to say than wow. I guess you have to be really cool. If you're really cool, you'll get this. And Obama means cool. Such as, "Man, you so Obama." This is serious. Bromance, B-R-O-M-A-N-C-E, means a close platonic friendship. And belig means drunk and belligerent. See soccer fans. They probably made that up. I don't think I have anything else. I'm coming down off the ice cream and cake. You know, that sugar high, it's a temporary thing. Wait a minute. Dateline Chicago from the Associated Press, Aerosmith lead singer Steven Tyler has broken his shoulder and had stitches in his head after falling from the stage during a concert in South Dakota. Guitarist Joe Perry told the Associated Press after a stop at a Chicago radio station that Tyler had been flown to Boston and was meeting with his own doctor for treatment. This is a different doctor than Michael Jackson had, by the way. An entirely different relationship. Steven Tyler, is 61 years old. Did you hear me? 61. He fell several feet while dancing around on stage. Guitarist Perry said that he hadn't had a chance to talk with Tyler yet, and he wasn't sure what made him lose his balance. Well, here's a clue, Joe. He's 61 years old. How about that? And he's dancing around like Hannah Montana on stage. Maybe that made him lose his balance. Perry said the band's had to cancel a couple of concerts during its first 25 years, but they've had a run of bad luck over the last 3 years. In June, Tyler hurt his leg at a concert in Connecticut, and the band had to postpone 7 shows in July. Tyler also battled pneumonia before the tour began in June, while Perry fought a knee infection. Folks, the Aerosmith tour bus resembles one of those casino buses on its way to Atlantic City. You know, there's not a lot of street drugs on their bus anymore. There's a lot of calcium supplements, laxatives, geritol. And, you know, now poor Steve's going to be in a cast. Or no, not Steve. Yes, yeah, Steve's going to be. Anyway. So there we go, folks. That's right out of the culture file. Folks, I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. May the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.